Dish from Waitrose is an SE Creative Studio production.
Clarence Court is home to Britain's widest collection of free-range eggs since 1928. Our traditional heritage birds produce a distinctively rich and iconic yolk that takes home cooking from the ordinary to the extraordinary. Loved by chefs and favoured by foodies, each shell is stamped with its own royal crown. It's time for you to discover the wonderful world of fabulous eggs by fabulous birds. Clarence Court.
Just so you know, our podcast might contain the occasional mild swear word or adult theme.
Do I tell him the car story?
You've got to. Come on,
it's
he'll
so
love
bad
it.
Though.
He'll
like
love
for
it.
Someone like that who is like a car aficionado, an expert. I don't know if he'll find it funny.
Oh, I think he will. He will. Anyway, you have to. I'm not asking. I'm telling. You're doing
okay,
it.
Okay, we'll
for
share
sure.
it.
You're
I
doing
think.
It. You will.
It's pretty embarrassing, but. Hello, I'm Nick Grimshaw.
And I'm Angela Hartnett.
OBE MBE.
Thank you.
Soon to be knighted.
This is our brand new podcast, Dish from Waitrose.
We have invited some of our favourite famous faces round for a Michelin star meal prepared by...
Yes, me.
Today we're joined by James May, presenter, petrolhead and producer of gin.
So while I'm cooking, you get the drinks for me ready,
okay,
please.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, chef.
So on today's menu with James May, G&Ts are going to be made by Nick. I'm going to follow it with a Sri Lankan-inspired monkfish curry paired with a delicious Villa Antonori. And finally, because it's James May, we've got a cheese board with loads of cheese, delicious chutneys and crackers.
Hi, James
Hello.
May.
How are you?
Oh, let's How do it the proper Italian way then.
Come on.
Yeah, that's it.
How's COVID? Look.
What have you got us?
It's my gin.
James gin.
I've got to explain something very important to you. So we made an initial batch of 1,000 litres, which was all numbered and signed.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of making gin, you actually have a tiny bit left over at the end. So we had, because we forgot to keep any for ourselves, we had two bottles signed but not numbered. So this is like bottle 1,421 of 1,420. So you can drink the gin. Please be my guest, but I must have the bottle back.
Oh, no. We want it back. James, tell us about the pub. We're obsessed that you have your own pub.
Half a pub.
Half a pub?
Yes, I only own half of it. Couldn't afford the whole thing. So this is in the village next to Hobbity Cottage. It's the village next to Hobbity Cottage. The pub is in Swallowcliff, the Royal Oak Swallowcliff plug.
Ooh.
Or as I refer to it, the Roy Swallowcliff, because I only own half of it. Yeah. So it's the Roy. So originally there was a pub in the village and it sort of fell into disrepair and it closed down and some developers were going to turn it into either a shop or some houses.
Mm.
The locals moaned about it, as people in villages do.
Yeah.
A group of four local blokes who had a fair bit of money to spend rescued it and spent a lot of money doing it up.
Mm.
And put lovely furniture in it and totally... I mean, it's an 18th century building, so it needed a lot of work. And it was a nice pub, and it served very good food. It has an excellent chef, but it never really made any money. And then the four investors decided they were fed up with it and wanted shot of it. And then they approached me and they said, do you want to buy the pub? And I said, well, not really. It's quite clearly doesn't make any money. But then I got talking to another bloke who had been one of the original investors, and we looked at everything about it. And we decided that it ought to be able to work if we got a sort of a proper pub manager in.
Yeah.
And we stepped back. We weren't going to try and run it. I mean, the words, it's such a cliche, you know, some middle-aged to elderly blokes buy a pub and think they can run it, but you can't because it's really bloody difficult. So we found a bloke from Yorkshire who could run it, and he's excellent, called Chris. And we bought it just before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
But we'd already agreed the price, so I didn't feel I could welch on it. So we bought it anyway. So we bought it and
overpaid
and closed it. Yes.
Great investment. Yeah, at the time, you were thinking, this is great.
Yeah, so we had to drip a bit of money in it to keep it from falling down. But now it's running and it does work.
But like you say, like a pub, I know you were saying like it just sounds so like, oh, two guys get a pub, it'd be easy. When we knew you were coming on the podcast, Andrew and I were like, we should get a pub. I think everyone has thought, I should get a pub and run it.
But it isn't, and you can't, because it's excellent. It's really difficult. My sage advice as a pub owner.
Not everyone can.
if you can do it, by all means buy one, if you can buy a good one, but give it to a professional to run. The other thing we have to acknowledge, and I know some people find this incredibly painful, but there are thousands of people from real ale societies and historic Britain and whatever saying, oh, the pubs are closing at a rate of whatever it is a day at the moment, 50.
Mm. Yeah, there's one near us that we always walk past, and when we're walking the dogs at night, yeah. And it's like a proper old London pub on the corner, like the bar's the whole middle of the pub.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're always like, we should buy this, having never even worked in a pub. We're like, we should buy this and run this. And like, now we know Angela. Get her in that kitchen every day.
Yeah. Oh, nothing else to do but cook for you in your pub, yeah.
When I take a step back, you have to remember I am one of the world's worst business people. I take a step back and think, right, in the old days when we first had this cottage, we used to go to this pub. It's the only pub within walking distance, yeah, which is why it had to be saved.
Yeah.
We'd go to this pub and we'd have nice suppers on Sunday or Friday, and we'd, you know, drink the beer and drink the wine. It was all lovely.
Yeah.
And I still do exactly the same thing because we have a rule. There's no freebies, no discounts, no mates,
right, yeah.
Everybody, even me and Simon, if we go there, we pay the bill normally. That's the rule. Otherwise, it simply won't work.
Mm.
So I'm doing what I always did, except I had to put the £1,000 in to keep the pub going. So it's actually the world's most expensive pint. That's all it is.
Well, I'm making you curry. I'm making you both sort of a monkfish Southern Indian curry for you with
beautiful.
Rice.
Oh, yum.
So it'll only take, we've done all the marinade, all the hard work's done. I've just got to cook off the fish now. So.
Is there an easy one, this?
Easy, you could do this, easy.
Patronising.
Yeah.
Do you cook, James?
The things I make successfully are basic pastas. I can do like roasts, mm-hmm. roast chicken mainly.
Yes.
I don't really eat very much red meat, so I don't do roast beef, but roast chicken, baked fish, some pastas. I can do some really basic curries and a basic ramen. I can make a pie,
mm-hmm.
toast.
Toast. Do you know what, though? Good toast.
Well, it's hard to beat. I mean, it's the
no
stuff
better.
Of life.
There's
what
no
bread
better.
Do you use for your good toast, though? That's, bread, obviously, is the
yes.
key, but...
Well, specifically, I use Paul's Bakery, the white one, which is quite nice bread, but it's, I don't know why, but there's something about it that makes it toast just fabulously.
Perfectly.
And I like quite burnt toast. I like all other foods same. Underdone, mm-hmm. but I like burnt toast. And Paul's toast, as it's just going beyond brown.
Yes.
The sort of the density of it and the crispiness, and then you put peanut butter or sardines on it or something,
oh,
and it's just...
Oh, no.
I mean, I'll kill you if you come near me while I'm using that. Head off.
What do you think it makes the best toast, Angela?
I really love, like, the old-fashioned white bloomer.
Yeah.
I like... The butter's got to seep through.
Yeah.
And I'm a Bovril girl, not Marmite, you see. I love Bovril on toast.
Oh, yes, that's right.
You see?
This looks great, Angela. What have we got?
Thank you. So we've got a monkfish... curry with steamed rice.
Oh, yum. And what's
quite spicy. I've put quite a bit of chilies in there.
Like
fenugreek, cumin, mustard seeds, nice bit of tomato, coconut. And we were going to go rosé, but I think... what was that?
Well, those are bad associations because that's now Clarkson's drink, you see.
I can't drink. Can't even see it.
No.
Can't even see it.
Contractually, I'm not allowed to drink
not
it anymore.
Allowed.
It just doesn't fit, does it, Clarkson, with rosé? But anyway, enough about
really
him.
Well, I think it does in a way.
Does it?
I mean, it's just because I'm used to seeing him drink it, I suppose.
Yeah.
He's been drinking it for years and years and years, and he's always...
Yeah, that's
he hasn't, got a bottle of it in the morning. But I mean, you know, in the evening, there will be a bottle of rosé because that's his favourite drink.
Does he drink it year round?
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeremy actually has a particular rosé that he likes. I will have different...
Oh, yeah,
what's
he going for?
Is it Whispering Angel?
Oh, yeah, that's what we've got in.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, you obviously invited the wrong guest.
Yeah, can you go now? He's round the corner.
Yeah. Hello, I'm literally here for a glass of rosé. I like that the monkfish has remained very slightly, I suppose I should say, al dente, but you know what I mean? It has firmness.
Yeah.
If it's overdone, even when it's in a curry sauce, it tastes dry.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
it's overcooked. Sure.
But Angela was saying before, me included, probably in this, that everyone always overcooks fish.
Mm. Yeah,
like it's a few minutes.
Yeah, they're nervous. People think it needs longer than it does, but actually it can eat. And also, well, you did the program in Japan as well. Fish can be underdone.
Yes.
I don't think it has to be. I hate fish when it's too overcooked.
Well, I overdo it. I mean, my main failing as an amateur cook is I'm somebody who likes underdone things and I like a lot of raw things, mm-hmm. but yeah. I overcook everything for exactly the reasons you say. I'm nervous. Mm. And I somehow think I'm going to kill myself. The hardest thing in the world to cook perfectly is a trout.
Yeah.
To get it exactly right. It's a bit like boiling an egg. They're all slight. Everyone is unique.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Different personality.
Yeah, it feels like a bit of a fluke if you get it right, to be honest.
It's really tasty, though. Really good. Thank you, Angela.
Pleasure.
Let's talk about what we watched last night, which was your new series. Which sees you touring all around Italy. Last night you were in Sicily. Is that the one you watched, the Sicily one? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's episode one. It was fantastic. I've been to Italy a lot. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been to Sicily that much. I've probably only been two or three times in my life. And I discovered that I always knew that Sicily was a bit sort of feral, I suppose.
Yes, I think that's a great way to describe it. Yeah.
And quite a lot of people say, I can't remember, was it someone like Goethe said that if you go to Italy but you don't go to Sicily, you haven't actually seen Italy at all. But the Sicilians think of themselves primarily as Sicilians rather than Italians.
Right.
But that's quite an Italian thing anyway, because you know, the regions of Italy are still... They've only actually been united for 160 years or something, 170 years. So they still have a sort of fierce regional mentality, which does extend to their food as well.
Yeah.
But the Sicilians particularly...
They're nuts!
I say this because my uncle's from Murano, right at the top there, up in the Dolomites. They were living down in the Veneto area, and I was going to meet a friend of mine down in Sicily. And he literally said, why? And I said, well, because I want to see Sicily. He goes, we've got Venice. You don't need to go south.
But to be fair, my gran was like that when I moved to London. She was like, what are you going to London for? And I said, well, I'm just going to go and work there. She was like, where are you going to get your hair cut? I was like, they have hairdressers. And she's like, what are you going to eat? Like, she was so set in her Mancunian ways. She'd never left the country. And she'd been to London once and didn't like it and came back in the same day. So maybe it's a northern
maybe
Britain, northern
Italian,
northern everything.
God.
My parents, they are from Bristol. We spent a lot of time living in the north and the Midlands and the north when I was young because my dad worked in the steel industry. And we ended up in South Yorkshire, where we were for quite a long time. But then my parents moved back down to Devon.
Right.
And they became confused about London because they would come and visit me. And I'm talking about less than 10 years ago, so I'm an adult. I have my own house, you know, with a job and things. And they'd always turn up and they'd bring things like food, bog roll, bedding. And I'd say, look, I've got all this. And if I haven't got it, it's at the end of the road.
Yeah,
we've got
the
supermarket and things. And they did. And it got worse and worse until eventually they turned up with their own carpet. And I said, why have you brought carpet? And they said, well, we think your floor's a little bit cold, so just feel the safe side. And they brought their own roll of bleeding carpet. And put it down. It took them about 2 days to unload the car.
No. Hey, how was the famously quite fab food in Italy? How was the eating in comparison to being in Japan?
Oh, now that's a good one. I've just found a green cardamom pod. That's not
yes,
I'm identifying
Nick,
that.
Well, to take that out.
Me? No,
yeah.
You're the bloody chef. I'm the cardamom sieve.
I would say the great thing about both of those countries is that fairly mainstream grab some food in the middle of the day because you've come out of the office or whatever is good in both. Your basic... conveyor sushi place in Japan. I've never been to a bad one. They're always great. And if you're in Italy and you just go into what I would call a cafe and have the basic pasta, especially if it's the one that is the local speciality. Mm. Regionality in food is still a genuine thing in Italy. It's not faked. It's not phony in any way. They do it. So if you're in Rome, you think I'll just pop in there for a carbonara.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, it'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
So you're very, very well served for everyday food, or what to them is everyday food, in both of those countries. If I had to choose a diet for life, bearing in mind I'm quite old now and a bit fragile, I actually probably would choose Japanese, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Right.
Because it feels healthy.
It does feel healthy.
Italian food is lovely, but you can see in over 6 episodes have to bear in mind that before we went away, I was making a real effort during lockdown to be healthy, ride my bicycle, eat healthy, do a lot of home cooking for obvious reasons. And I was actually, by my standards, looking very buff. But at least...
That Dolce Vita look.
At least thinner than I was. I mean, I was probably the healthiest I've been in for at least a decade.
Yeah.
And then went to Italy.
And then I went to Italy, yes. And you can see, if you look very carefully, you can see through, if you watch the programmes in order, you think, he's getting fatter.
He's getting fatter, yeah.
And he is. So, and if I ate Italian all the time, yeah. I would just
hey,
be...
Hey, yeah. Hard not to. I'd love that excuse, and I don't know if we have it in Britain, where... if I was an Italian man and I got fat from eating yeah. pasta, I'm doing that for
time.
The country.
Yeah, no, it's a patriotic act.
Yeah, it's patriotic. He's eating that pizza yeah. and pasta.
Yeah, exactly.
To respect his family. That curry, by the way, was really delicious.
Thank you. Thank
it was
you.
Really good. So what was it? Sri Lankan?
Sri Lankan inspired. So right. Southern Indian, nice spicy, but not too overpowering.
No, it's good.
Coconut milk in there, tomatoes in there, a lovely monkfish.
And can I just ask, because my curries tend to come out as sort of grey. Do you sort of do onions and spices first, then do the fish, then add the...
No, fish rice at the end on this one. Onions, spices all at the beginning, let them cook down, then add your tomatoes, add the coconut milk, let that simmer, and then fish literally, as we were talking, I put the fish on and let it cook for 3-4 minutes, that's it.
So it's not marinated or
anything? Oh, it's marinated a couple of hours before, but just a bit of turmeric and lime juice.
Ooh,
and the lime firms it up slightly.
Because that tasted simple but sophisticated.
It did.
Woo! Thank you.
That's what we are. I'm simple. She's sophisticated. The tagline for our podcast. But now we're going to move on to a cheese course. I
Good.
Love a cheese and cracker moment.
Yeah.
And James, you have become sort of an icon for cheese.
Well...
Do you feel that?
That's extremely generous of you. You're talking about this so-called cheese meme.
Yes.
Where I put the piece of the cheddar on the table and say, cheese.
Yep. God bless the internet that this became a thing. What was this, 2020?
Yes, probably was. So I did. It was a thing we did for our food tribe videos.
Yeah.
It was called Cheese versus Cheese. And it's quite a lengthy and in-depth investigation, but the only bit that's been taken from it and remembered is me going... Cheese. It does. I'm very flattered, and apparently it's going to the moon.
Yeah, I love the story.
What's his name?
Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast, massive YouTube influencer and so on. And he's sending a capsule of basically the equivalent of that thing that Blue Peter buried in the garden. Television centre.
Have they dug that up yet?
No,
I think
somebody,
it was about 2020. Did they?
Somebody nicked it. Yeah,
oh.
Anyway. He's sending the equivalent to the moon, but in digital form. So it's sort of humanity's best work. It's got some poems and artworks and songs, and it's got me saying cheese. And of all the things, I mean, I'm not going to
Do you feel that you want to be remembered for that?
No.
No, I feel like you've wrote, what, 5-6 books?
Yeah.
Many TV ideas spanning different disciplines.
I'm not going to claim to have worked hard, because that would be conceited, but I did work quite hard over the years.
Yeah.
I went back into things, and we did some quite highbrow TV programmes about history and science.
Mm-hmm.
But give it another 50 years, and people will go, James Ray, wasn't he that bloke who said cheese? That's it.
I might go for this one, this green mouldy.
Cornish yarg.
Oh, okay.
Can I ask your opinion? This is apropos of nothing, but grape scissors, which I always thought were a myth.
What do you mean?
Weirdly enough, I'm going to see him later this week, but I have a friend who's very particular about things like this, and we were at his house, unfortunately not me, but one of the other guests was pulling the grapes off the stalks and eating them. And after a while, he completely lost it. And he said, "Well, you use the bloody grape scissors." And he actually had some. And what you're supposed to do, apparently, in polite company, is cut off your own little bunch. And then you pick the grapes from it so that the stalks remain on your plate. You don't end up with a load of naked stalks in the... And I mean,
that
is quite particular.
Some grape scissors.
Exactly. And I want some grape scissors.
I want some grape scissors.
Something I haven't got.
No. Yeah, but you can use other scissors.
No.
No,
I mean,
just
I'm
grape
scissors.
No. Angela, don't be crazy. I feel like we can't have James May here without talking about cars.
Yes. What is your favourite car?
Yeah, come on.
My favourite car.
No, you really don't have to answer that question. Answer that.
People do ask me that a lot. Yeah, do that. Yeah. People have been asking me that for 20 years. I still don't know.
No, it's like, I don't really like a favourite
anything. You cycled here, no?
No, I'm going to cycle back.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't have a car anymore, and I basically did this deal. I need to show you this, actually, James. I've got pictures of it. With this car company where they said, like, if you DJ for us and, like, you do some stuff for us, we'll do some stuff for you.
Right.
I can't remember the exact deal. And, so anyway, they
can
like,
you,
let
can
me
you remember
a car.
What sort of car it was?
Yeah, I did. It was a Mercedes G-Wagon.
Good God.
Yeah.
That's proper gangster.
Well, you know me.
Is it?
You know, proper gangster. So I had that and I just moved house and I just moved in. And I think my neighbours were already like...
having a cardiac arrest.
God, look who's moved in next door. And it was in one of my first weeks of me moving in that I managed to flip it on its side.
Oh.
On a residential street. And I mean on its side... blocking the entire road.
How the hell did you do that?
And it was so shocking, right? And someone ended up taking a picture and putting it in the paper. And genuine story, Lewis Hamilton got in contact to say, how did you do that? Yeah. That's a true story. And I flipped it, look, like that. And it was like this. And the problem was, once I flipped it up on its side, it's so heavy... that no one could...
Well, you couldn't lift it up by yourself.
I couldn't lift it. But no, like the fire brigade came out, it blocked the whole road. It was like school run time of an evening. So no one could get down the street. And I was just like, oh, really sorry. Just moved in, flipped the car. And then when the car was on its side, like the fire brigade came because they were like, maybe it'll blow up. I don't know. Or like they didn't know what was going on. And then they couldn't lift it on its side, like with whatever tools they had. So they had to contact one of the fire brigade, knew a like car sort of, I don't know, car saving company? Yeah. I don't know what it was. So this like man came with a huge truck, flipped it up on its side, put it on the back of his lorry and like drove it off. So I was like, great, gave him the keys. So then Mercedes were like, what the hell happened? And I was like, I don't know, I just like turned the corner. And it was, the reason was it was so tall, that car, that when I turned the corner, it was a tight corner. I like hit this Golf and rather than just crashing into it, hit a car.
Okay.
And rather than just hitting into it, it just like drove up it like a monster truck and then fell on its side. But it was so slow that a pedestrian was like, what? You were driving, what happened? So I don't know how it happened. It must have been just like a great physics angle or whatever. But when the car, the next day, Mercedes were like, so where's the car now? And I was like, oh, a guy took it. And they were like, who? And I was like, the man on the truck. And they were like, well, who was the man? And I was like, I don't know. And they were like, where are the keys? I was like, I gave them to the man. So they were like, well, who was the man? And I was like, I thought you'd... So, like, they couldn't find it for weeks because a man came and I just gave them the car.
So, did you ever see that car again?
Never saw the car again.
Did anybody see it again?
They did find it and then I never heard from Mercedes ever again. And they used to invite me to, like, Silverstone. Never again.
God, never again. That
so,
was it.
Yeah. So, we've blown it, Angela.
So, you climbed out of it, obviously. So, it went
when
on
it
the
fell
left
on its
side.
Yeah. Like this. And then they're so big that I could stand up in it and I still wasn't out of it. So I had to like climb out of it like I was in an action movie. But it was a good way to meet the neighbours because everyone came out, you know? I was like, hi, I'm Nick. I've just moved in.
I can imagine that your neighbours, presumably you live in quite a polite place.
Yeah.
And they said...
I think they laugh now a good 6 years afterwards, they're all right with it. Right.
Or do you think at the time they said, Grimmy's moved in down the road, and then they got up the next day and they said, told you, look at that. G-Wagon on its side in the middle of the road.
100%.
He's here.
100%.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that one.
James, it's been great chatting to
you.
No,
I've really enjoyed myself. I've enjoyed
Thank
the food.
You.
And I'm still enjoying the cheese, as I said.
Please.
It's never ending.
It will
cheese
never end.
Cracker, yeah. Cheese cracker. You could be here by the time we come back next week for our next guest.
We're going to have a bit more.
Amazing. Thank you, James. We We can't all have a Michelin star chef in the kitchen, but you can ask Angela for some advice. Email dilemmas and any food-related questions to dish@waitrose.co.uk and we'll get Angela to help you out. All of the recipes and drinks can be found on the Waitrose website at waitrose.com/dishrecipes.
Subscribe to Dish from Waitrose wherever you listen to your podcast so you don't miss an episode.
And make sure you leave us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts because we're very needy and it helps people find the show too.